You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jason McIntyre, and I'll tell you why we just got proof that every team needs to stay away from Dez Bryant.
And I'm Colin Cowherd, and I'll tell you why all the people hating on LeBron's move to the Lakers are going to be in trouble. Speak for yourself on a Monday. Whitlock's out. McIntyre's in starts now.
Woo!
Ready to go.
Hello and welcome. Jason Whitlock is off today, but we're joined now by former NFL coach Eric Mangini, former Pro Bowler T.J. Houshmandzadeh. Let's move to New England, where the drama around Tom Brady continued this weekend. Though this time it has nothing to do with Bill Belichick, Jimmy G, or Malcolm Butler. Instead, Brady was taking questions from the media. One reporter decided to get a little cute.
Tom, when Julian tested positive, a lot of people connected it to Alex Guerrero. Just, what's your reaction to that? Do you think it's fair?
No comments. It's just ridiculous.
Tom,
I'm out.
See you guys.
With a smile on his face, Colin, was it ridiculous to ask Brady that question?
Well, no, because the TB12's a business. Tom used to be an employee. Tom's now a business owner. We didn't create this topic. If I'm sitting in New England, I don't want to ask him about stuff like that. I don't want to go up to legends and ask him tough questions. I like us to have a relationship. They can give me information. Tom creates a business. Belichick's had to answer to the business. He's come out and talked about Guerrero. I didn't know who Alex Guerrero was. We didn't create these topics. Nobody wants to ask a coach about a trainer. Nobody wants to go to a legend and ask about a clinic. But here's what I would say to the people that say it's not a topic. If one more Tom Brady clinic person gets busted, it's not a topic then. It's a health and fitness brand. We just had a guy busted for PEDs. So, again, if it was a clothing brand, if it was a landscaping brand, it's a health and fitness brand. Alex Guerrero is supposed to be this wunderkind, this genius guy, and all of a sudden we got some suspension. Edelman's never been suspended till he's into Tom's stuff, and I'm like, all right.
All right, let me push back on you a little bit. You said if we get one more, that would be open for discussion. Colin, Guerrero's been working with Brady for a while. A lot of Patriots have been working. More than 10 Patriots have been working with Alex Guerrero. Guess how many have been popped for PEDs? Zero. None. This is the first whiff of impropriety. And I believe when you look at Edelman, 32 years old, coming off a major injury, is it possible that he maybe strayed away from Guerrero and tried his own thing to come back?
Yes.
And we're looking at a guy in Tom Brady who doesn't need to get involved in this. This is not his mess. I know you said he's connected to the business, but just because he is 41 and doing things that no quarterback's ever done, it feels to me like the media's looking for something with Brady. How is he MVP at 40 years old? We've never seen this. And Coach, you know Brady as well as anybody. When I look at Tom Brady's reaction to that, he had a big smile on his face.
He wasn't
like,
happy.
Dude, I'm not getting involved in this. This is not my mess.
Well, it isn't his mess, and it is a ridiculous question. New England, they don't talk about injuries. They don't talk about anybody else's situation. That's never been done, and the idea of putting him in a position where you're calling into question whether or not his success is somehow tainted, I don't think that's very fair. And in terms of owning a business, you've owned businesses outside of TV, haven't you?
Yes.
Do you know all the things that happen in your businesses?
No.
Exactly. So just because you support a business or you're part of a business, it doesn't mean that you know every single thing that's happening from a day-to-day perspective.
The question wasn't inappropriate because there's people in New England and across the world that they want to know the answers to that. And Tom's response wasn't ridiculous either. That was his way of defending Alex. And going back to Edelman, there's so many guys in the league that will train with this guy, go see that guy, go see. Nobody works with just one person exclusively. Nobody does. And so whatever happened with Edelman, I'm almost 99% certain it didn't come from Alex. Because Alex is a, he's not giving you pills. At least he wasn't when I was playing. He's not giving you those type of things. He's working on your body, the pliability aspect of things. And you go back, oh, nobody's never seen a 40-year-old quarterback win MVP. Well, the training camp, when I came in, first day of practice, two-a-days. Second day, two-a-days. Third day, you can't even walk. If you're that sore, the third day of camp, you can't even walk. It's not like that anymore. Guys' bodies, they recover so much quicker because they're not wearing you out like they used to when I came in.
And, well, and the other thing, just on the, his two-a-days, is those two-a-days weren't 2 days with no pads. Those were 2 days with
full pads.
Full pads in the morning and at least uppers in the afternoon. And it was hitting back to back to back. It is radically different now than ever.
But Tom,
before.
2 years ago, it was really after the Super Bowl win against Atlanta, like the miracle finish. Tom extended his off-field stuff. I mean, Tom was always very covert, passed up a lot of commercials. I think he had a Visa commercial. The last 2 years, he's got, I mean, he's got pliability lotions. He's got documentaries. Tom has extended his business. Well, I'm a reporter. He's extended it now into my territory where he's got a clinic. He's created a fissure within the organization that Bill's had to answer to. That Alex Guerrero off the team plane. Bill didn't want to talk about that. So I feel like if I'm a reporter, like, I was fine when Tom was part of the singular voice of the team, but now Tom's got his own religion. It's called the TB12. It used to be New England's religion. So I feel like as a reporter, he's extended to my area. I'm forced to ask questions about stuff that I don't want to ask.
I don't think that question is inappropriate. I really don't. And I don't think his response is either. He responded how he responded. There's people that want to know, did you have something to do with that? And he walked off because he can turn this TB12. He can expand this across the world because people see his age and how he's performing.
Oh, no question.
They would know.
But the reason it is ridiculous is because Tom Brady has nothing to do with the Edelman situation. And when you ask a
perception of him.
But the perception
being
is not reality.
Yeah, but remember, this is an organization with Deflategate, with Spygate. So there is always been this envelope pushing sense. Maybe it's jealousy, but I mean, we've got suspensions here.
But the one thing that's been consistent is they don't talk about these topics.
I can still ask.
But it's ridiculous in the sense that, do you think I'm ever going to talk about this? Do you think I'm ever going to address this? So you want them to address an injury? You want them to address someone else's situation? It's like classic issues that are never talked
so
about.
They
could ask a million questions and they'll get the same answer. Tom's just establishing. He's setting he's getting the media into training camp form. Sure.
So Rob Gronkowski works with Guerrero. Last year, linebacker did. Anytime someone gets injured or popped for PEDs, are we going to come to Brady with
yes.
these questions? That's not fair.
Well, fair, the question, is it ridiculous to ask?
I think it is.
It's called the TB12 clinic. It's not called the Cam Cleland clinic. It's not called the, you know what I mean? It's not called the Malcolm Butler clinic. It's Tom's clinic. His name's on it.
Yeah, but there's guys with car dealerships. Are we going to ask him about every muffler that breaks?
No, but if there was an embezzlement charge at a car dealership, I would ask the player. All right, to another guy surrounded by drama, Dez Bryant, who is still unsigned, maybe for a while. Dez ripped into his old team over the weekend, blasting the Cowboys play calling on Twitter after Stephen Jones said Dez was bad for Dak Prescott in an interview. But when a fan replied that Jones was clueless, Dez really went off, tweeting, quote, "He's not clueless. Jerry was the only one who was clueless. Bleep was planned to get me out and ask Travis, my brother Snake Lee, I mean Sean Lee." Ugh. Oh boy. McIntyre, did Dez just prove he's pretty unsignable?
Yeah, I would say so. I think at this stage in his career, he's 29 years old. I think the immaturity outweighs the talent. I mean, this is a guy who had an awesome 3-year run, Colin. There was a run where he was one of the best receivers in the league. And now, when the Browns come kicking the tires, we may look at Dez Bryant within 48 hours. He's going off on his old organization on social media. This just shows that he's just not ready to be part of anything special. Hell, be part of an NFL team. I don't want that in my locker room.
Well, I think the Amazon Prime series hurt him because it validated the rumors. Anytime there's rumors about anybody and you're like, that's a BS, it's not true, and then it gets validated. Somebody's like, no, I work with him. He's crazy. that Amazon Prime series, I mean, we'd all seen Dez on the sidelines, and everybody's like, well, he's just passionate. And then you watch the receivers meeting, and it's just a general question, and Dez blows up the room. And you're sitting there watching. I mean, how many times have you watched Hard Knocks and thought, oh, boy, that guy, Ocho in Hard Knocks. You're like, that's a lot of work. I watch Dez in Amazon Prime, and if I was a coach, I'm like, I don't want that in my wide receiver room. Yeah. I got a rookie receiver. I've got a veteran. Who wants that?
Look, as soon as somebody gets hurt or a few people get hurt, he'll be his market value will skyrocket. And it's just a question of whether what type of deal he's willing to take. A couple of years ago, he was in the Pro Bowl. He led the Dallas Cowboys in receptions last year. And there are a lot of receivers, and you can talk about this better than anybody. You talk about eccentric or hard to deal with or difficult from a day-to-day basis. There's a ton of guys that fall into that classification. Jarvis Landry, didn't he just go off on his old team?
Yeah.
He's with the Browns.
No problem with that. Yeah, he signed. It's not a big deal because he signed.
Yeah. But
the unsignable part, we're an injury or two away from his market value changing.
He's not unsignable. The problem that I'm having, it's, and I wish Dez hadn't tweeted what he tweeted, because coaches just don't want to sign a guy that the play calling was bad or snake. You just don't want that. Now, I wish for him, we're all human. If you say something negative about me and I don't think it's warranted, I'm going to respond. That's just, we all will. I wish he hadn't publicly put that out there, because it just doesn't it doesn't look good for Dez. It just doesn't. You're looking for a job. There's going to be coaches that say, oh, man, if we bring him here, he doesn't perform well, he's going to bash my play calling. So publicly, everybody's going to be examining Linehan's play calling now moving forward, even though he's not with the Cowboys, because of what Dez said. And so I just wish these guys would think before they do that.
When I look at this,
but he's
TJ,
not unsignable.
Well, hold on. Let me ask you this. Okay, so it's out there that the Browns were thinking about Dez Bryant. What's the first thing an agent will do? Call his client. Hey, man, stay out of the news. No problems. The Browns are interested. We could have something here. Let's stay inside. No social media. Those are the basics, TJ.
He couldn't help himself.
Come on.
Do you think that his agent is running Dez?
He's got to try.
He couldn't help himself. It's no different than last week when I said something about Paul Richardson, saying, oh, it's so much better in Washington than it is in Seattle. There's no need to say that. What do you get from that? Dez should have just bit his tongue. Whether he felt Sean Lee had something to do with it or not, don't respond. You're trying to get a job. Can he still play? He can still play.
You say if somebody gets hurt, but, you know, Dez over the last 2 years, a lot of drops. Forget all the antics. Is he a great receiver? I mean, he doesn't separate
He's
anymore.
A starting receiver in the league. You got to understand, Dak Prescott was a rookie. And so, rookie, you're not really pushing the ball down the field as much. They're going to run the ball and intermediate throws with a rookie quarterback. And so, it was completely different than what he had with Tony Romo. That's why his production slipped.
And from an organizational standpoint, if you can get a guy that has been extremely talented, has been extremely productive, and you get him motivated, there's been a lot of examples of guys signing those one-year show-me deals, where they go to a place, they sign a deal, and then the next year they're able to hit a much bigger contract. You bring in a motivated player at this point in the preseason, you've got a good chance to be successful. The idea that this tweet is the difference between signing him or not signing him, I don't think so. There's a body of work here. There's a body of the way that he's acted. This isn't shocking to anybody. It's just whether or not organizationally you're willing to deal with those things to get the upside of his ability.
Derek, aren't there so many young, good quarterbacks in the league that you do not want to bring Dez Bryant anywhere near your locker room? If you're Mitch Trubisky, no thank you. Jared Goff, even Sam Darnold in New York. You're not going to get these guys a veteran receiver who's a massive diva and potentially going to cause you problems in the locker
room.
I don't care what the injuries are.
Any receiver, specifically Dez Bryant, if he has any sense, wherever he goes, he's not going to do that.
And you know what's worse?
Because if he does, this is last year playing. He won't do it.
What's worse than a diva receiver is a receiver that can't get open. So if you're looking at the whole
situation.
What
about the both combination?
Well, but if you're looking at the situation of, okay, I got a guy that's not going to be productive, he can't really get open, and I've got the chance to go get a guy who can help us, especially those teams that may be on the cusp, and they lose a receiver at this point in the season or during preseason, then they say, okay, well, let's go rent Dez for a year and know that we're going to have to manage the situation, but he gives us a better opportunity to win.
Losses equal rationalization, mostly.
Yeah, and so does job security. I mean, there's a lot of things that equal rationalization. People reach when they think they're close to either winning or they're close to getting fired. And then when you've got a talented guy sitting there, you know, you may make a reach.
Welcome back, Eric Mangini, TJ Hushmanzada. Let's move to Green Bay, where Aaron Rodgers looking to have a big comeback year. Great to have him back. Missed 9 games last year, broken collarbone. And just took some time at Packers training camp to talk to his former receiver, James Jones, who asked Rodgers how he wants to be remembered.
Guys remember, you know, the way I was in the locker room, the way I was in the field, the way I competed, the way I cared about them, the way I cared about the game. I put my heart and soul in the game. That's, I think, what any player wants to be remembered mm-hmm. for. And then second, about championships. You know, we've got one. My time, you know, it's not going to last forever. I'd love to get at least another one.
At least another one. So, J-Mac, do you think Aaron Rodgers needs another title to be considered an all-time great?
No. Aaron Rodgers is already an all-time great. He's already a top 5 all-time quarterback in my book. This is a guy legendary. Beat you with his arm. Beat you with his legs. I mean, you want to look at completion percentage for his career, passer rating for his career. Those are higher than Tom Brady's, okay? I actually compare Aaron Rodgers to LeBron, and Tom Brady would be Michael Jordan. Okay, Aaron Rodgers has never had the support that Tom Brady's had. He's never had the coaching staff that Tom Brady's had. Everything for me points to Rodgers already an all-time great. I think you're selling him a little short. If he wins another title, great. But this is a guy who was leading the MVP race last year before he got hurt. He was an onside kick fumble by some tight end in Seattle. Remember that epic game in overtime?
Yeah.
I mean, they win that. They go to the Super Bowl. Like, Aaron Rodgers is
so
right
there. So time out. Let me get this straight. So Brady is who?
Michael Jordan.
And Aaron's who?
LeBron.
So is Joe Montana Robert Horry?
Yes, there you go.
Boy, first of all,
of course not.
I don't even know what all-time great is. To me, if you look at Aaron Rodgers today, he's Steve Young. He has a Super Bowl. He's got 2 MVPs. He had to sit like Steve Young behind a legend for a couple years. Unfair to him, but the way it worked. He went to a good organization with a very good offensive-minded coach. Both all-time efficient, smarter than average, better mobility than average, and they were both quirky. One was a lefty. People didn't like to draft lefty quarterbacks, and Aaron was a little small out of Cal, a little mechanical and a little small compared to the Marinos and the Bradshaws and the Aikman. I love Aaron. He's great. There are times he's not the greatest leader. He ad-libs out of successful plays. I have known 3 or 4 teammates that have said yes. He can be aloof. He is not always the world's best leader. I don't see the whole MJ GOAT thing. I think, no, by the way, Steve Young Hall of Famer, Aaron Hall of Famer. I'm not doubting that. You start getting into all-time great, where's Elway? Where's Montana? Where's Peyton Manning? I know a lot of people think Marino's the greatest talent ever play quarterback. I don't think he's better than those guys. I don't. I think he's had a lot. The best 8 quarterbacks in my life I've seen play. Now, again, Bradshaw may have the interceptions, but in the years I grew up in my 20s, he was a monster. He was the biggest arm in the league. He was a 6'4.5", 225. He was drafted number 1 out of, like, Louisiana Lafayette. The draft wasn't even televised. Those are the best 8 quarterbacks I've seen. By the way, Young, Rodgers, Fouts, Big Ben, all real close.
Well, you got Drew Brees on that list. He's only got 1 Super Bowl. You've got a guy, you talked about Dan Marino. He's got no Super Bowls. The question is, does he need to win a Super Bowl to do that? And I don't think he does. You also brought up the point that he ad-libs out of some good plays. He also ad-libs into a bunch of really good plays. And he is unique in the sense that he's got incredible accuracy. He can hurt you in the pocket. But then he's got that ability to move that other quarterbacks like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady never had. And he's got that accuracy on the move as well. And you look at his ability to control games or to win games that look unwinnable. He's been able to do that as well. I don't love the narrative about he hasn't had enough help. I think that can be a bit of a cop-out, but I don't think it's a function of one more Super Bowl for him to be, you know, in
you
this
have
list.
Him all, yeah.
I look, the all-time great conversation we could do for the next 6 months every single day and have valid points, but he's definitely in that group, and I think that you could easily debate that he's among the elite.
All-time great in my book, easy. You just watch him and you see all-time greatness. The thing with Aaron Rodgers, football is a team game. His defense in every playoff game has given up on average 26.5 points.
Oof.
How many games are you going to win giving that up with his defense? You're not going to win many playoff games. He's 5-6 in the playoffs, but they're giving up an average of 26.5 points. So when they give up less than 21, they're 7-0. He possibly could have two or three more Super Bowl championships had the defense played a little better. So for me, from what I've seen when I watch football, me being a receiver, I would have loved to play for him because he makes it easy for you. He throws you open. You don't have to really do too much. If you create separation, you're getting 100 catches, 1,200, 1,300 yards every year. He's that good. So all-time great, he's already won. I believe he'll win one to two more Super Bowls
today
to validate
you,
that.
Okay. You coached against Elway. Beat you late one year. Okay, Elway, Rodgers, go.
I think that Aaron Rodgers is probably the more difficult of the two. Now, the offenses were...
To defend,
just because...
Different game now.
Yeah, it's different, but his ability to generate plays outside the pocket is just so hard to deal with. Now, Big Ben has that ability, too. It's a different package, but when you're trying to run conventional defense, when you're trying to run things from a system perspective, when you can generate those plays and have that type of accuracy... It's hard to coach that. You can't coach your guys to deal with that because they're better at it than you are at practicing it. And he has that trait.
Drew Brees over Aaron Rodgers. You're really sticking with that.
How many
MVPs for Drew Brees? I've lost track. He's got so many. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has two, okay?
He's had, I think of the, isn't there like of the 8 5,000-yard seasons, he's got 5. He's a machine.
System.
They throw that ball a lot down in New Orleans. They throw it so much, you're going to put the yards up and you get such a big lead, you just hand it off in the fourth quarter.
Listen to you guys.
The TD to interception ratio, to me, I think is a big point, too. I know we talked about it earlier in the day. The fact that you're not giving away games, and Aaron Rodgers has been great at protecting the football.
Do you like Brees?
I do like Brees. I think that system is incredibly hard to deal with, but they're going to throw it and throw it and throw it.
You know the problem with comparing athletes? You compare two athletes, it's like you're putting one down that's really, really good.
That's
the tough part. You know, you compare Elway to – they're both great, but who would you prefer?
Welcome back. We're now joined by a couple of NBA champs, Eddie House and Dante Jones. Let's move to the league where everyone's favorite source, anonymous player, has struck again. This time telling reporters that LeBron's move to L.A. wasn't actually about basketball, explaining, quote, "He's not coming to the Lakers. He came to L.A." LeBron, for his part, disagreed in his first public comments about the move.
This is kind of like a dream come true for me. You know, growing up, you know, I was a Cowboys fan. I was a Bulls fan. I was a Yankees fan. And I've always felt like that was like one of the historic franchises. And you look at the Lakers, you know, being able to play for a historic franchise, you know, with so much history. You know, and now being able to partner with Magic Johnson, someone I kind of like, you know, looked up to when I was younger and, you know, wanted to make no-look passes like Magic, wanted to get on the break and be Showtime like Magic, and then for it to all come to fruition at this point, I think timing is everything.
All right, Colin, LeBron's biggest fan. Do you think the Lakers are LeBron's top priority?
Yes, he has a right to a life. Michael Jordan had quite a life beyond basketball. Listen, what smart players do is as they get into the last stages, probably the last 4 or 5 years, Tom Brady's doing this. They move into what I would call the mogul stage. The first stage for LeBron was, here's how gifted I am. We're all like, wow. And then people want titles, Grammys, Oscars. That's why Leonardo DiCaprio did a movie with a bear and didn't talk. I got to win an Oscar. Then you win rings, Grammys, Oscars. And then, now you got $100 million net worth. Everybody knows you're great. And that's mogul stage, which is, I still care about acting, but, you know, I'm going to be out of this sport in 4 years, and I'm going to build my brand. It's okay. Listen, LeBron's a smart guy. LeBron gets it. LeBron's like, listen, I can do business in Cleveland, but I can go to dinner. I can go to lunch every day with a big shot in L.A. It's probably a little better for his brand. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but without question, the Lakers are his top priority. But everyone has those side priorities. You know, Steph Curry's getting into the movie business now. Mm-hmm. Kevin Durant in Golden State is now in Silicon Valley heavy. Like, this is what guys do on the side, but the Lakers are clearly his top priority. I mean, I said it on the show, and I believe Whitlock laughed when he was here that day. If LeBron can take these Lakers, who for the last 5 years have the worst record in the NBA, If he can take this Lakers and take down the Warriors in the next couple of years, I believe that'll solidify him above Jordan as the greatest of all time.
I agree with that. I do. I think that's true.
We had this conversation earlier, and this is the first time that a fan base in an organization is challenging LeBron James. LeBron James has been challenging himself for years. He's been pushing himself. He's been setting the tone for all of his accomplishments. When he went to Miami, whatever he did in Miami, he was going to get his jersey retired. Whatever he did in Cleveland, he was going to get his jersey retired. But in order for him to get his jersey retired as a Laker, he has to bring championships. He has to bring a level of championship for an extended period of time to get him a statue and to get his jersey retired as a Laker. So now this organization and this fan base challenges him rather than him having to continuously challenge himself, which is hard because you get to a point where you have so many accolades and you rest in your own accomplishments.
Right.
So now he's being challenged by a set of fans that only stand for the best. They only stand,
and,
they
and
only
rate the way,
they only rate success on championships.
And love their last player, Kobe. So I mean, there is that, you know, there's that thing where there's some fans that are like, you're not Kobe.
So now it's a different set. It's a different challenge now. This is a different challenge rather than you have to push yourself all the time.
Well, I think, of course, the Lakers are a top priority. He's a basketball player first. How he was able to put himself in position to be in L.A., to be in movies and do all these other business endeavors is because of basketball. That's the first thing that he is a basketball player. And then he's a businessman after that. He's definitely taken this. I think the one thing about it is if you look at him, he's more relaxed. He's living life. He's going out to dinner with Leonardo DiCaprio, Al Pacino. He signed on to do a movie. HBO picked up the Uninterrupted. He's living life right now. He's in L.A. He's enjoying it. And he has no pressure and no expectations. I mean, if the expectation is just make the playoffs, I mean, that's no pressure for them. They're definitely going to make the playoffs. People thinking it's him coming to the Lakers is the end of his reign. I don't see it like that. I see it as it's a new beginning, a new chapter for him because people want to say how tough the West is not that tough. You telling me that he's not going to be better than New Orleans? You telling me he's not going to be better
Minnesota?
Than Portland? He's not going to be better than Portland,
Memphis,
all those teams. He's going to be better. Utah? He's going to be better than Utah.
He jumps as the third best team and just his presence. And then this is a situation where this team is not done yet. This is just the season hasn't started. They haven't finished. It's a blank slate over there. This is an absolute challenge for a guy who has not been who has done basically everything you can do and is trying to set more records, to set a better standard for himself. And basketball is definitely his first priority.
Listen, when Michael Jordan came back to the Bulls at 33, they won 3 titles. Okay, LeBron doesn't have the wear and tear of college. Michael did. They're the same age, right? Okay, Michael broke his foot year 2. LeBron's never had a major injury. The NBA is more of a cardio league than a hand check. Collapse on the floor league.
Right, not as physical.
So LeBron's got also health and wellness is better today than 25 years ago,
Definitely.
20 years ago.
Science is
LeBron's
better.
A bigger, stronger athlete than Michael Jordan. You know, it's funny how many people, if you go to look at LeBron last year in his Eastern Conference run, you could make an argument that was the greatest Eastern Conference run statistically, efficiency-wise, he'd ever have. He's still the best player for a minimum of 2 years, I'd bet 3. He's all good.
This idea that he doesn't care about the Lakers is,
crazy.
To me, it's just crazy. Because remember, he's the one who went outside the box. He's getting laughed at for Lance Stevenson, Rondo, JaVale. I like it. Remember, people laugh when he picked up Mozgov and J.R. Smith in a trade. They ended up winning a title with J.R. Smith, okay, in Cleveland. Like, LeBron, there's a method to his madness, and I firmly believe it. I'm not going to doubt LeBron.
To another guy on the move, Carmelo Anthony, who has been waived by the Hawks and will reportedly sign with the Rockets once he clears waivers. That's the plan. Now, Melo's been in decline for years. He's made it clear he doesn't want to come off the bench. He will not. So, J-Mac, the question becomes, does he help the Rockets?
No, not in any way, shape, or form. I mean, this is a mind-blowingly bad move for the Rockets. I mean, Colin, think about this. They win 65 games last year. For the first time, Mike D'Antoni's team plays defense. Remember, that was the big story last year. They can lock people down. Twice, Eddie House is laughing, but twice, when they lost to the Warriors in that series, they beat the Warriors twice with defense, held them under 95 points. Melo doesn't play a lick of defense. He's not the offensive player he once was. They're losing Trevor Ariza, and people are glossing over this. That is a massive loss defensively. Great two-way player. Carmelo Anthony's going to go in there. Hey, I'm not sitting on the bench. I'm starting. Who are you going to start over me? Ryan Anderson? He'll laugh at that. Carmelo is going to be a disaster in Houston. I think they precipitously fall from 65 wins.
The weird thing about Carmelo is this is an analytic-driven organization. That's what Houston is. Houston is, you know, not everybody. The Knicks pushed, Byron Scott pushed. A lot of people push back. That's fine. But they've been all in on analytics. Melo's not a great analytic player. He is very much old school. So I don't know if it's a disaster because he's still a gifted player. But we have the combination of it's an analytic organization, not Melo's strength, and Mike D'Antoni is a mostly passive leader. He's not a fist pumper. He's not a Pat Riley. Right. He's not some young Brad Stevens where he's this academic. Mike is a player's coach. He doesn't push back. He struggles with confrontation. At some point, I think whoever coaches the Rockets would be best served if they had a little harder edge. Melo's got $150 million net worth. You got to get in his grill a little bit.
Good luck.
And I just wonder about the coach, the analytics, and the aging player.
I think they have the right leader, and it's not Mike D'Antoni. And as you know, the leaders that run the team basically are the players. The players ultimately run what's going on out there and affect everything. And you have Chris Paul as your leader. He's your anchor. He's the guy that's setting the tone for James, for Clint, for everything out there. Mike D'Antoni was going to do X's and O's. He's going to do substitution patterns. He's going to do what's best for him and what's best in his skill set. But CP is their leader. And as you saw, when he went out, it changed the whole the course of the series. So defensively, are they going to take a little bit of a downside because Trevor is an immensely important part of their team? Yes. But I think Melo gives them a different way of performing on the offensive end. They give you a different guy when they can't score and when James is a little run down, or if CP goes out again.
Oh, well, he missed 27 threes again.
Is he a starter?
I don't know, but I think this is a different situation for Melo because Melo is joining them. He's not traded there. He's saying, I want to be a part of what you have going on. And that's a different perspective as a player rather than you're looking at the guy on your roster and he's not better than me and I'm trying to fit in rather than just – I know what I'm getting into. He's going to have a conversation with D'Antoni, a CP, and James Harden. And I'm going into you guys' culture. I'm trying to do what's best for us to win rather than just me just coming on the team.
This is tricky for me because last year when CP3 went to Houston, I was like, there's no way it works. Yeah. There's no way where two ball-dominant guards that need the ball in their hand, it's not going to be enough basketball to go around. But what happened was they were able to figure it out. They are perfect for Mike D'Antoni's system. A guard that can handle a pick and roll, that can shoot the three, that can finish at the rim and make plays for others. Those two guys are perfect for a system. Melo, when he played with Mike D'Antoni, the first go-around, experiment number one, all his numbers went down. It didn't work. He doesn't fit into that system. So for me, it's tricky to say that it's not going to work because I said that last year about them. To me, the way that it can work is if Melo checks his pride at the door, swallows his pride and say, hey, you know what? Whatever it is you guys need me to do, I'm going to do it. I know I'm not the best defender, but I'm going to be giving effort and I'm going to try everything I can do. It's not going to be any plays off on the defensive end. If he's able to do that, I think that it can work. And he has a guy that's in his ear, one of his best friends,
right.
CP. I think that goes a long way in reeling a guy in with you because he trusts you and he, you know, y'all have that friendship. So he'll listen to you before he'll listen to D'Antoni.
Swallow his pride, Eddie. What percentage chance is Carmelo going to do that? He's never done
Everybody
that.
Everybody has to do it at some point, though. Look, think about that. What D-Wade did last year. D-Wade, we're talking about two superstars. You know, we never seen a guy like this guy right here can really, really score, right? Melo can score. Defense is not his strong suit. Everybody doesn't have everything. But if you're able to maximize his talents and put him in with this team and he's able to say, this is what my role is and accept it, I think it can work. Well, but it's going to be really tough.
Well, when you have a leader like CP who can get the best out of Melo, that's what we get when we see Olympic Melo. Melo takes a step back, swallows his pride, and just does what he does, and CP fits it and makes the pieces work. And I think that's what we'll get. When you're playing next to a true friend and a guy that you respect and I can give you input and give you corrective and criticism on what is going on and what you think can help you, I think you get a better Melo. And I think he gets that.
What does help Melo, when he was in Oklahoma City, Paul George is a wing scorer. He's a wing scorer.
Right.
It's an odd fit. And Westbrook's very ball-centric. If you look at Houston, you could make the argument they don't have a wing scorer.
They don't.
They could use a 6'8" guy in the wing that can shoot.
But 2 point guards.
This is the thing with their system, though. It's not like they're going to give it to the wing and say go to work. It's ball movement, and if it's not really that much ball movement. It's all funneled through CP and James Harden. Now, is Carmelo going to be able? Is he going to be all right with standing in the corner or standing on the wing and waiting to get the pass and not having his number called?
What a bunch of optimism, guys. I love it.
All right, welcome back. Eric and TJ are back. Let's return to the National Football League. We got news today. Sam Darnold became the last quarterback taken in the first round to sign his rookie contract. Came to terms with the Jets. It's a four-year, $30 million deal. He held out at the start of camp. All right, McIntyre, you're a Jets fanboy, a pom-pom waver.
Woo!
Is this marriage going to succeed?
Of course it will. I mean, the Jets tried their best this week to screw it up, Colin. I mean, they were really bungling this. But listen, this is a team that hasn't had a franchise quarterback. I mean, Mark Sanchez was not. Chad Pennington was not. Eric may disagree with some of these other guys. You got to go back 50 years to their last Super Bowl appearance. 50! That's how long it's been. I mean, Sam Darnold, we've watched him a lot out here in L.A., right? We know I'm in love with Sam Darnold's game. I think the innate ability, you know, for him to create plays and deliver passes in tiny windows. I love everything about Darnold. I think this year, only 21 years old. We don't know what the offensive line is. Let's ease him in. Remember, Goff didn't start right out of the gate. Trubisky did not. Deshaun Watson did not. Pat Mahomes did not. So there's no pressure for Darnold out of the gate. I think by year two, he will be a phenomenal starter in the NFL.
I love him. I've watched a ton of his practices. I'm not a coach or a player, but the draft gives us about one really high-end quarterback a year. That's what about what it does. And I think he's the guy. And I always kind of go back to, forget all the football stuff. Big, thick body. I mean, even his hair looks big. He's just big shoulders, big kid, durable. He's got kind of a blue collar. I mean, he went to USC football and felt like a linebacker. And I like his whole mentality. And I think it's kind of, you know, LA kid goes to a high school nobody talks about. They kind of feel like they find him. He wasn't a huge recruit. And he comes in, and in a week, the highly touted recruit transfers, seeing on the field, I'm not that good. And I just think there's a lot of stuff about Sam that a player would know about and a coach would know about that you have to just appreciate his football-ness. His football, there's a certain sensibility with Sam. He likes the game, not what the game provides for him. He's into teammates. He's a giving teammate. He doesn't want to be a superstar. If he does, it's production. And I think in these New Yorks, I don't think it's a coincidence that Jeter, Mariano Rivera, Phil Simms, the Chad Penningtons work in that city. They don't seek attention. New York can gobble you up, and I think he works there.
Well, I remember when I traded with the Jets so that they could draft Sanchez. Remember Sanchez and what a bad deal it was, and how could you possibly give away that quarterback who's going to lead the Jets to the future, you know, years and years into the future and multiple Super Bowl wins. I think the thing with any quarterback is you got to slow down. You got to see how well they develop. I think it's difficult for him already. You saw the comments from Chris Johnson about how this is a organizationally changing moment. This player is going to totally dominate the trajectory of the organization for years to come. When you start putting pressure on a kid like that from the start, it makes it really difficult. What is the level of success now that is going to get people to be happy with him over the next 4 or 5 years? I mean, the expectations are so high, I don't know how he could possibly live up to them. And a lot of things have to go right with his development for him to become the player that he potentially can be.
So, number one, Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers, Joe Flacco, Alex Smith. Those are four quarterbacks that have been fairly successful. They started two or less years in college. If you don't start 3 years of college football, the chances of you playing well in the NFL aren't that high. What's going to have to happen is they're going to need McCown to play really well out the gate. Because if he does not, do you play Teddy Bridgewater, who if he gets in the game and plays well, now we have a problem? Or do you play Sam Darnold? Because if you play Sam Darnold, he's probably not going to be ready to play, and mentally, you can crush him. That's going to be the biggest problem, because if McCown does not play well and Teddy Bridgewater goes in a game and performs, what do you do? Because Bridgewater is a young – what do you do?
I'm going to throw this out to you, though. It's interesting. Because Bridgewater can play in this league. We saw before he got hurt, Teddy can play. Josh is considered a backup, right? But a good mentor. What about this if you're the Jets? You show off Bridgewater. He's probably more ready to play, and you play him. And you're not going to win a championship this year. And then 6 weeks, 8 weeks.
But if he plays really well,
then you have an, an asset.
Yeah, there you go.
You have an asset. You've let Darnold work behind
But you don't even know if Darnold could actually get on the field and perform. I want him to do well just because he's from Southern California, where I'm from. So I root for him. He trained with Jordan Palmer. Jordan Palmer swears by him. So I'm rooting for him.
They gave up a lot to get him, TJ. They gave up multiple draft picks. He's your guy.
It's what Coach said, though. Like, when these quarterbacks are drafted high, it's, oh, they're the savior. Oh, my God, they're going to change the franchise. And then they get out there, and in a year or two, you guys are like, oh, my God, he's not that good. And you have to temper expectations because you just never know.
I think in a weird – you tell me. If you had Josh McCown, you probably coached him. He's been everywhere.
I didn't have Josh.
Okay, but Bridgewater, again, a grown-up. Mm-hmm. We know McCown and Bridgewater are adults. And McCown is an able and capable mentor. I think in a, it kind of works. Like, if I was a coach, I'd be like, you know what? I'm in no rush. Let's get to Thanksgiving. Let's develop Sam.
Yeah, well, New York's not a town that's known for their patience. and the words of ownership is not a patient tone either. Oh. I mean, they're looking to get him in as quickly as possible. They're looking to fill that stadium. After down seasons, they've got to be productive. And you've got a head coach and you've got a GM that are borderline on the hot seat, if not on the hot seat. So there's going to be different conflicts going on here.
He started 2 years.
Do you win right now?
That's tough.
Or do you try to look longer term? But is the head coach and the GM, do they have a longer term viewpoint right now based off the situation they're in? There's a lot of things that are going to come into play.
He's the savior, but he's not there the first day of camp. Go figure.
Well, it's not his fault.
He just turned 20.
No, that's my point.
He did.
Management should have made sure that he was there first day, right away.
Eric, you know how inept this franchise is, right?
No, look, with the contract, you got to do what's best for the organization, too. Well, who is it, Hackenberg? I mean, it's easier to get married than it is to get divorced, but you want to be protected on the downside.
Welcome back. Time for last call. Let's move to LeBron James, who showed up at his son Bronny's AAU game this weekend and threw down some nasty dunks in the layup line. Colin, are you cool with LeBron stealing some of the shine from his son?
Yeah, I don't get the outrage. I don't like the hat on backwards.
Of course, you never do.
I don't have to rethink my position on that, but a lot of people were bothered by this.
Yeah, but LeBron's who are these people? Are we talking about Twitter eggs, Colin?
If you were in that gym and LeBron did this, wouldn't you be like, dude,
I got a free dunk contest from LeBron.
This is great. Like, I'd be like, I get my phone, I take a picture. I'm like, you're not going to believe what just happened in the gym I'm just in. Yeah. Like, why are some people? This is something we wish we all saw at a gym on a Sunday.
100% agree. To Tuscaloosa, where the University of Alabama just announced a new contract for Nick Saban, extending his deal through 2025, paying him $8.3 million this year, the most in college football. Colin, is Saban actually underpaid?
Yes. Anybody that coached at Alabama, if he retired tomorrow, you'd pay $5 million. Okay, so is Nick worth $3.3 million more than Ed Orgeron? Or, I mean, who would get the job?
So disrespectful
to Ed.
No.
I mean, if Nick left and you were hiring a guy that's considered, I mean, how many, Urban Meyer's not leaving Ohio State. Nick's making $3 to $3.5 million more as the greatest college football coach ever than the average guy that would get the job.
The market decides, as always.
He's worth every penny and
more. That's it for us. See you tomorrow.